culture to politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. New records on Wall Street, in fact. The market up sharply today. Maybe not legendary territory, but up almost 100 points, the Dow. And with all of that going on, there are some states in the union that are opened up, partially because they have more conservative political leadership. One of those states is Montana, and Montana is ending its participation in the federal unemployment extension program that had been giving people extra weekly unemployment benefit payments. Now, why are they doing it? Well, because there's a labor shortage. They are SEPA replacing the unemployment supplements with a one-time $1,200 return to work bonus. That is going to people who leave the unemployment rolls and actually return to work. So is this a good idea or a terrible idea? No one better to talk to about that than somebody who's been very critical, because I lean in the same direction, of the unemployment extension bonuses that have been part of the rescue packages, including the one that President Trump supported. Steve Moore. Steve, of course, was an advisor to President Trump, was one of the founders of Trumponomics, the designers of it, and in fact wrote the best-selling book, Trumponomics. So, Steve, a thumbs up or thumbs down, do you say, on what Governor Greg Gianforte has done in the state of Montana?
Well, hello, Michael. Well, first of all, a thumbs down to these policies that have increased not just unemployment benefits, but food stamps, rental assistance, other forms of welfare that have really made welfare pay and work not pay throughout the country. And so we are seeing, one of the biggest deterrents to the even faster grower economy is getting workers back on the job. And you see it from coast to coast. We have a restaurant down the street in our village, one of the most popular restaurants, and the sign on the door is, sorry, we're not open, we can't get the workers back. So that's a big problem. That's probably the biggest problem that employers are facing right now. And so I just heard about this program this afternoon, and I think it's exactly the right thing to do. If you're going to pay people, $300 supplemental unemployment benefits per week on top of normal benefits, on top of all the other programs, it's going to be very difficult to get workers back to work. Everyone, I bet, listening to the show, Michael, I bet everyone listening to the show knows somebody who's at home who could be and should be working but isn't going back because they're getting paid more for not working. And I call those the Netflix unemployed. Those are the people who are sitting on their couch watching Netflix and not going back to work. And so I think Montana's very smart here.
Okay, a part of what they're doing is saying that if by cutting off the $300 extra per month and then offering this one-time bonus of $1,200, do you know if that bonus is coming entirely from the state, or is that also going to be federal money that's used?
I do not know the answer to that question. I think that if I were the governor of Montana, I would go to the federal government and say, hey, look, we got a deal for you. We're going to save you money because we're not going to be collecting all these unemployment benefits, but give us some money to get an incentive for people to work. Incidentally, it's important for people to understand the original idea of these extra unemployment benefits among some members of Congress, not all of them, but some, was in the middle of the pandemic. They wanted people to not go to work. In other words, they wanted people to stay off the job because of the pandemic. They didn't want people getting sick. And so the idea was, we're going to even pay you more to stay home than go back to work. Well, now we got the opposite issue, right? We don't want people to stay home. We actually do want people to go back to work. And so the incentives are just way out of whack right now. You and I, Michael, of course, we believe in a safety net for people who fall on tough times. We don't want people to go hungry or homeless or go into deprivation if they lose their job, and everybody falls on tough times. But it's just not good economics, and it's not fair for people to be making more money, you know, than the guy next door who's going back to work and, you know, working 40 or 50 hours a week. It's just, it's an issue of economics, but it's also an issue, in my opinion, of fairness.
Here is the comments made today by Governor Greg Gianforte, Republican governor, of course, former congressman, actually met Congressman Gianforte during a trip to the Capitol building a couple of years ago. He talks about why he has decided to end his state's participation in the program for supplemental unemployment benefits. Here's the governor.
Now, as we've opened up, employers can't find workers. It's across all industries. Restaurants are having to shut down for days because they can't find cooks or wait staff. So we made the decision yesterday, these supplemental unemployment benefits, honestly, we got what we incented. We were incenting people not to work. So we made the decision to opt out of the federal supplemental unemployment benefits and replace it with a back to work bonus. This is going to help employers. And honestly, there's dignity in work, and there's also satisfaction in being self-sufficient. We made that decision yesterday, and we're just getting a phenomenal response from our business community.
That's Governor Greg Gianforte of Montana. Montana, by the way, the only small state, and it had had for many years, only one representative in the House of Representatives. It's getting an extra representative, which is assumed that it's going to help the Republican Party. Quickly on general economic policy, President Biden has introduced so many plans and programs and new spending. What I want to do is a real challenge for you, Steve Moore. Is there anything, any detail, one little fingernail of the Biden agenda that you could actually support?
Nothing that comes to my mind. I mean, almost everything that I hear is wrongheaded. The capital gains tax, the dividend tax, the massive increases in our business and corporate tax. I think those are all negative for the economy. I think, if I were advising Joe Biden, I did give some advice to Donald Trump throughout his presidency. My advice to Joe Biden would be to stop. Don't do anything. We don't need any federal help. I mean, we are in the midst of a big, big boom, and the boom is going to happen because of Operation Warp Speed. The vaccine is the stimulus. We're getting people back to work, notwithstanding the unemployment benefits. We're getting businesses reopened. We're starting to see people out doing things again, going to movies, going to restaurants, going to stores, going to beaches, going to hotels. This economy, it doesn't need help right now. It doesn't need more government spending and debt. It just doesn't. I think the rest of this year is looking really strong. And I think the worst thing we could do is just massively add another $2 trillion of debt. And by the way, some of those proposals add to $4 trillion of debt. And I'd ask that same question you asked to me, to your listeners. Do you think we need $4 trillion more debt right now on top of all the debt we've just added in the last 18 months? My answer is hell no, we don't.
By the way, in Montana, just this statistic flashed on my screen, the unemployment rate at the moment, Steve, it's 3.8%. That's technically considered full employment, isn't it?
It is. There's different measures of full employment, but most people say it's between 3.5% and 4%, which is where Montana is. And that means, and by the way, it is true that in these red states, like Montana, like Utah, many of the southern states, Idaho, they have unemployment rates, South Dakota, that are, between 3 and 4%, which is amazing. Now, the problem states are, California, New York, New Jersey.
How about Illinois?
Like that. What's that?
Illinois?
Illinois, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, you bet. And Steve Moore, for sure. What a pleasure always to speak to you. You can read some of his latest commentary posted at our website. And on the mic. Michael Medved Show. It's a pleasure to talk a little bit about Republican candidates, Republican governors, who are having a good day or a good week or actually a good first term in terms of Ron DeSantis of Florida, who is one of the people of the hour for Republican voters and presidential handicappers. But there's another Republican candidate who's unconventional, an outsider, is running for one of the most important political positions in the country, to be governor of the nation's largest state. She's never run for office before. And is only recently she, of course, which is what everybody knows about Caitlyn Jenner. However, having raised a bunch of money already, have announced candidacy for governor of California, Caitlyn Jenner, who identifies as a female Republican. Yeah, really. Is out with a new ad that is drawing some pretty positive reviews. The Caitlyn Jenner ad, clip one, sounds like this.
I've always been a dreamer.
California was once the envy of the world. We had what everyone else wanted. The American dream grew up here. Yet career politicians and their policies have destroyed that dream. It's been locked away, closed, shuttered, left in the dark, burned down. The government is now involved in every part of our lives. They've taken our money, our jobs, and our freedom. California needs a disruptor, a compassionate disruptor. I came here with a dream 48 years ago to be the greatest athlete in the world. Now I enter a different kind of race, arguably my most important one yet, to save California.
Okay, and then this about reopening the state, 1B.
I want to carry the torch for the parents who had to balance work and their child's education, for business owners who were forced to shut down, for pastors who were not able to be with their congregation, for the family who lost their home in a fire, for an entire generation of students who lost a year of education. This past year has redefined our career politicians as elitists and the people of California as the warriors, the kings, and the angels. We never take kindly to glass ceilings here. Instead, we shatter them.
This one's way out there.
We're the trailblazers, the innovators. California is facing big hurdles. Now, we need leaders who are unafraid to leap to new heights.
Okay, this is a fascinating situation because even left-leaning media look at this ad and say it's pretty persuasive. It's pretty good. And then that raises the question, what if Caitlyn Jenner were still Bruce Jenner? Would Bruce Jenner be doing as well as Caitlyn Jenner is doing? And the answer, I think, is no, because, yes, Bruce Jenner was already a celebrity, but Caitlyn Jenner, with all the controversy and the attention and the magazine covers and the endless stories, that's a different level of celebrity. And I think makes some of the more Republican appeals, for instance, he was talking about pastors there, he's clearly trying, which is, for the first really high-profile transgender candidate, this is a bold move. And I do think that most Republicans in the state of California are probably going to respond very well. I do think it's great that she is running for this race because it makes it vastly more likely that Newsom will actually lose his recall election. In fact, he's kind of recognizing this. This is the statement of Governor Gavin Newsom about the timing of this recall. Listen.
Now is not the time to waste hundreds of millions of dollars on a recall effort that is nothing more than a partisan power grab. This is, and forgive me, a Republican-backed recall where the principal proponent of the recall effort wants to microchip immigrants. One of the principal spokespeople equates, Mr. President, wearing masks to the Holocaust.
Okay, this is not Caitlyn Jenner. And it's precisely why I think it's going to be a tougher race for Gavin Newsom than he expects or would like. He wants to run against shadow Republicans, people who take a very extreme ideas about microchipping immigrants. That's a devious attack here because really there are already enough fears in the conservative community about microchipping and, dare I say it, Bill Gates. But for Newsom to run against Caitlyn Jenner, it's a bizarre moment in our history. It truly is. And I don't know how many Republicans there are in California who would never even consider voting for such an obviously transgendered candidate when you have reservations about some of the core transgendered issues. But then he turns around, or she turns around, pardon me, I'm really not doing this deliberately. But then that transgendered candidate turns around and says, wait a minute, it's not fair to have boys competing against girls, biological boys against girls, because they are either in the midst of transition or feel that their true identity is female. Look, it's very early, but this is going to be a fascinating race. There's also a race, and it's a race basically to deliver one of the things that America needs most right now. And one of the things that America needs most right now is a return to parenthood. The number of babies born in America last year was the lowest in more than four decades, according to federal figures that were released today. Really? How low can you go? And why does it matter? We'll get to the birth dearth and more coming up on the MedVet Show.
Your outlet for outrage.
Where's the outrage? I'm shook up, and you know what's going to happen? I'm going to be driving down the road listening to all this. I'm going to wreck the car and sue Michael MedVet.
Okay, don't sue and don't wreck the car.
The Michael MedVet Show. 1-800-955-1776. The Michael MedVet Show. Politics to pop culture and from coast to coast, this is the Michael MedVet Show.
And sometimes the news intersects with all kinds of personal feelings and events. That happens for everybody, doesn't it? Doesn't happen to you? Certainly happens to me reading this headline, which I find alarming. U.S. births dropped to lowest since 1979. And given the fact that I've always believed in the idea that a new baby is God's vote that humanity deserves to continue, a new baby is also a parent's vote that humanity or our family or us deserve to continue. And the idea that so many Americans seem to be stepping away from that ideal of parenthood, I'm troubled by it. Anybody welcome the idea that the birth rate has dropped to the lowest in four decades. 1-800-955-1776, our phone number. And Wall Street Journal reports the total fertility rate, a snapshot of the average number of babies a woman would have over her lifetime, fell to 1.64, which is unbelievable. You can't have, of course, 1.64 children. What that means is that's the average of all of the women out there. It means a lot of them have no babies. A lot of them have one baby, and at most two. That would be probably the most common number. But an average over a lifetime, 1.64, that's the lowest rate on record since the government began tracking it in the 1930s. And likely it's the lowest record ever, because before the 1930s, families were generally larger. One of the reasons they were generally larger is because babies were enormously more likely to die before they reached maturity. Total births are the lowest since 1979. Because the COVID-19 pandemic emerged in March, says the Wall Street Journal, the figures capture just a short period at year's end when the unfolding health and economic crises could be reflected in women's decisions about getting pregnant. Demographers say the data suggests that more fundamental social and economic shifts are driving down fertility. Births peaked in 2007 before they plunged during the recession that began that year. Although fertility usually rebounds alongside an improved economy, U.S. births fell in all but one year as the economy grew from 2000 until early 2020. This, by the way, is why I asked Steve Moore one question about, was there any aspect of the Biden economic proposals that he might support? And my answer to that would be any element in his economic proposals that encourage parenthood, that help parents struggle. And by the way, there are a lot of thoughtful Republicans led by Marco Rubio, Mitt Romney, others, who have talked about child-friendly tax reforms and other reforms to help encourage parents. And the journal quotes from a demographer named Kenneth Johnson, who's senior demographer at University of New Hampshire. And he says, it's not just COVID, it's the fact that the birth rates never recovered from the Great Recession. I've been waiting for years, he says, to see a big jump in fertility to women in their 30s. And it hasn't happened. Shows a drop that was already underway before the pandemic only got worse once the pandemic actually took hold. Millennials who were born between 1981 and 1996 now account for the majority of women having children. In seeking to explain their lower fertility rates, researchers have pointed to the fact that they are marrying later in life, getting higher levels of education, and are less financially secure than previous generations when they were the same age. First of all, about the financially secure than earlier generations, I don't think that's true. I mean, certainly my parents' generation, my mom was born in 1924, my dad was born in 1926, earlier generations were not financially secure, more financially secure than people today, and certainly not people growing up in the Great Depression. So to blame it on financial insecurity, I think it does have to do with waiting to get married, and also the devaluing of the ideal of family. And I felt this very profoundly over the weekend. I mentioned before on the air that We have the great privilege of my brother, Harry, coming up to visit us over the weekend. And he's coming back for Memorial Day weekend with his whole family, his two beautiful daughters, and his beautiful wife. And we are going to all get together. But even just having Harry here, we got together with my son and our daughter and two of our son's three kids and our daughter's little boy. And the babies were kind of playing on the floor together and other kids running around the house. And, of course, competing as to who could hold the 10-month-old. And it was just, I couldn't help feeling that this is what it's about. My brother was taking great joy. He had never met our two grandsons before, one from our daughter, one from our son. All of this is the essence of wonderful. And, of course, I think about that in the context of the Bill Gates divorce situation. I think I'm going to speak about that with Diane on air, just as we've spoken about it in person, because she wrote The Case Against Divorce, which was a big bestseller more than 20 years ago, and then most recently Don't Divorce. And we've gotten a lot of emails saying you've sent Bill Gates Diane's book. I do think that's part of it, is the tremendous publicity for very high-profile examples of people who leave marriage. And again, one of the things that discourages children is if you are insecure about marriage, if you believe the lie, and it is a lie, it's still a statistical lie. It's always been a statistical lie. It's not even true. Half of marriages do not end in divorce. But if you believe that, you are less likely to have kids. Because again, today we have much more ability to determine whether we have kids or not. This is all problematic for the United States, the entire situation. And Wall Street Journal concludes, U.S. fertility rates still remain above those of many other developed countries that have long struggled with low birth rates, such as Japan, Italy, and Germany. We are moving down towards that, but we haven't quite reached the mid-range of all the European countries, said one of the demographers about this. But moving in that direction, we're going to be speaking tomorrow to Brett Stevens, who talks about why people who have said for a long time, oh, we should be just like Europe, we should be social welfare states, we should be neo-socialist states. He says they're not paying attention to what's actually going on in Europe. We will talk about that and how that relates directly to this particular problem and more coming up on The Medved Show. Michael Medved Show. Whenever people challenge me about beginning every hour of this show with describing America, think accurately, as the greatest nation on God's green earth, the people who challenge me, I ask them back, okay, if America is not the greatest nation, what is? And generally, the answer people give is one of the Scandinavian nations. Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Iceland, or Finland. And Finland, in fact, has actually appeared at or near the top of various indications for governmental success, for success in organizing society. They have a remarkable educational system, and they do very well in test-taking, competing against countries everywhere. The other two sort of surprises in terms of educational excellence are Poland, yep, and South Korea. But in any event, Finland often ends up on top. But here they've ended up on top in terms of earning a Golden Turkey Award.
Bigger than the Academy Awards.
First and foremost, I'd like to thank God.
Groovier than the Grammys.
I would like to thank my wonderful agent.
And more powerful than the People's Choice.
I would like to share this with every single senator.
Now, it's time for another Golden Turkey Award nomination.
A very prominent politician, a member of parliament in Finland, is facing jail time over a tweet. President Trump is complaining about his Twitter rights being taken away. I understand that. But here in Finland, this lady, whose name is Päivi Räsänen, she is a former Interior Minister of Finland and still a member of parliament. She's also a physician. She's a mother of five. And the government is now talking about actually putting her in jail because she won't apologize for a tweet that quoted from the Bible. Okay, and when you look at her tweet, what she did is she took a photograph of an actual biblical text and posted that. And the text was from 1 Romans 24 to 27. And we will get to that text in a moment. And you should be prepared because I don't want to go to jail for actually reciting it on the air, but I will. I'll take that risk and assume that the Biden administration isn't trying to catch up with Finland and this political correctness insanity. The Päivi Räsänen could receive a 2-year prison sentence for the tweet after the Finnish prosecutor general announced last week that she would be subject to criminal charges. She could face additional jail time if convicted of two other alleged offenses relating to her comments in a 2004 pamphlet and on a 2018 television program, the group said. She is a critic of same-sex marriage. That's the problem for Member of Parliament Räsänen. The Protestant general charged her with incitement against a minority group, arguing that her statements were, quote, likely to cause intolerance, contempt, and hatred towards homosexuals. Well, they're quotations from the New Testament, for goodness sake. Räsänen, who served as Finland's interior minister, said, I cannot accept that voicing my religious beliefs could mean imprisonment. I do not consider myself guilty of threatening, slandering, or insulting anyone. My statements were all based on the Bible's teachings on marriage and sexuality. Finland has 5.5 million people, and it has two official national churches that pretty much nobody goes to, the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Finland, and then they have the Orthodox Church of Finland. The 61-year-old MP, who was a chairwoman of the Christian Democratic Party from 2004 to 2015, is an active member of the Finnish Lutheran Church. But she questioned her church's sponsorship of a gay pride event back in 2019. She asked in a Twitter post how the sponsorship was compatible with a Bible, linking to a photograph of a biblical page. And here's what it says on that page. Okay, protect your children if they are sensitive to politically incorrect material from the Bible. Okay, therefore God gave them over in the sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served created things rather than the Creator, who is forever praised. Because of this, God gave them over to shameful lusts. Even their women exchanged natural sexual relations for unnatural ones. In the same way, the men also abandoned natural relations with women and were inflamed with lust for one another. Men committed shameful acts with other men and received in themselves the due penalty for their error. Well, that's it. Is that worth 2 years in jail? Really? I mean, it's astonishing. The ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom, is taking this case. And the International Executive Director of ADF says freedom of speech is one of the cornerstones of democracy. The Finnish Prosecutor General's decision to bring these charges against Dr. Räsänen creates a culture of fear and censorship. She's 64 years old. Going to jail for 2 years for citing the Bible? Really? Yeah, really. She says, I will not back down from my views. I will not be intimidated into hiding my faith. The more Christians keep silent on controversial themes, the narrower the space for freedom of speech gets. Can we hope that with everything else we have going on here, this is real censorship? It's not like they say, we're not going to allow you on our platform. You can't tweet anymore. Fine. She'll find another platform. But when the government actually talks about imprisoning people for something they want to express, and that expression involves a biblical quote, heaven forbid. Literally, heaven forbid. One of the movies that's out there making a little bit of a stir is a film with a moody atmosphere that features Anthony Hopkins, fresh from his Oscar victory. Is it worthy of his talents? Listen.
Now it's time for Medved's Entertainment Minute.
Fresh from his surprise Oscar victory in The Father, Anthony Hopkins plays a mysterious crime lord known only as The Mentor, who commands an expert contract killer on a number of brutal missions in The Virtuoso, now playing in select theaters.
It's really simple when you think about it. Kill or be killed. Do not put me in a bad position.
Well, actually, Hopkins is in a bad position since he barely appears in the movie beyond a long overwritten monologue that comes across as more stagey than riveting. The rest of the film is narrated by Anson Mount as the title virtuoso. Scenes of killing and mayhem are very well staged, but in terms of emotional or dramatic satisfaction, this moody virtuoso is dead on arrival. Rated R for gruesome violence and considerable nudity and graphic sexuality. Only 2 stars for the dark but disappointing The Virtuoso.
This feature brought to you by the Thank Heaven Foundation.
This is not going to win another Oscar nomination for Anthony Hopkins or anybody else. If you've ever dreamed, boy, I sure wish I could be a professional contract killer and go out and murder people at will and be depressed all the time, where the only friend for the virtuoso is a dog who is a stray, of course. If that's the kind of movie you want to invest your time in this spring season, this is the movie for you, or one of many. Okay, 1 billion people worldwide, according to a new Gallup poll. It's 1 billion people are just refusing to get vaccinated for COVID-19. Why is that? And where is the resistance to the vaccine strongest? Some surprises there. Speaking of surprises, lots of controversy about eating meat. How about the new trend of eating rotten meat in order to get high? And we'll also be joined tomorrow by two of the smartest minds in the conservative universe. Neil Ferguson, historian of Stanford's Hoover Institution, and Brett Stevens of the New York Times. All coming up next time.